Footcast Edition 001. Hi, welcome to Folkcast, the podcast where we're going to bring you the best in folk, singer-songwriter and roots music, and we'll be talking to the people making that music today. For downloading the first ever Folkcast. Hope you're going to enjoy what I've got for you. That's music from artists Silver Wheel, Big Owl Whittle, Catgut. From Newfoundland we've got Jim Fiddler, and I'll be talking to Ken Nicol, guitarist, singer-songwriter and master musician.
Please.
traditional song Cold Haley, given a right royal rogering there by London band Silver Wheel. My name is Wids. You might have seen me online. If you're anything to do with the folk rock world, you'll have come across me on the Fairport Convention list and other places like that. So this is my attempt to bring the best in new music, plus whatever we can get our hands on for the best of existing artists as well. My partner in crime is Ken Nicol, who you'll know as the singer, songwriter, guitarist and member of Steel Eye Span at the moment. He's been in the Albion Band, worked with Ashley Hutchings and all sorts of wonderful bands in the folk field. So I'll be talking to Ken about his music and his collaborations later on. But next we got The Owl from Nottinghamshire's Big Al Whittle.
There's a certain magic, the owl said to me. He flew into my headlights beam, he said, listen carefully. We that choose the midnight hours, we travel joylessly. I am a talent predator, I don't need to see. The heart that beats within you, I can hear its muffled beat. Don't you listen to the music from your heart, or you're wedded to defeat. I know you sang to a rabble all night long, alien words and subject tongue. I'm flying now in your slipstream, I can speak the magic rune. From the walls of my temple, mix it with your trashy tune. On such a night, when the stars are restless, I'm sitting on a sky of midnight blue. Like an old-time magic show, the magician casts his spell, he says low, lo and behold, all the floors of heaven are lined with gold. Long after midnight, traveling east out of Manchester. First the closed down towns, then the lonely hills. The roads twist and turns and twist before me. Like a lifetime of sadness, never bending to my will. Finger ring encloses, so does her breast enfold my heart. Sing to the darkness sentimental songs, songs saying we will never part. Talent Owl, he fell then to the valley spread below. Joe Cocker sang about a bird on the wire. I snapped up the radio on such a night, when the stars are restless, I'm sitting on a sky of midnight blue. Like an old-time magic show, the magician casts a spell, he says low, lo and behold, all the floors of heaven are lined with gold.
Big Al Whittle with The Owl there, and full details of all the music that we're using in Folkcast can be found, of course, on the website. Check the show notes, they're at www.folkcast.co.uk. And some of the music that we're using comes from the very wonderful Podsafe Music Network, including the next song, which is from British band Three Blind Mice, Emily Has Compassion Fatigue.
Dodo call, remember me. See the doormat has a new disease. Pizza eats a million trees. is finished with us, and the sea is bruised and swollen with memory of every God-forsaken anchovy. Summer in your hair. So to the news, the world is dying. On its decree, we all start crying. Emily's in love and does not care. Emily's so in love, the world's not there.
Ken Nicol first came to prominence in the 1970s as one half of Nicol and Marsh's Easy Street with musical partner Pete Marsh, which took him all the way from Preston in the UK to the heart of mainstream music in Los Angeles. After living and working in the US for 8 years, he returned to his roots and, while following his own path on a series of solo albums, continued to work in collaboration with other artists, including Chris Weil, and then with Ashley Hutchings in the Albion Band and the Morris On Ensemble. Ken's writing brings a fresh taste to folk rock, mixing pop, blues and ragtime with traditional sensibilities, which, coupled with his widely admired playing style and strong vocals, create his own identifiably unique mix. Today, he's a member of Steel Eye Span, the iconic band which has experienced a renaissance in the past few years. And when he's not doing all that, he'll be my co-host on Folkcast. And we couldn't let the opportunity pass to tell you more about the man and his music.
Thank you.
Ken's self-penned piece in the wake of Forward Motion there from his new album, 13 Reasons. Welcome, Ken, to your own studio.
Oh, well, it's very nice of you to invite me here.
Well, it's a bit of an odd situation because Ken and I are partners in this little podcast enterprise, but, well, when you've got a megastar like this on your own books, then you've got to talk to him, so let's do that.
Which one are you talking about?
Me. Now, I always imagined that your introduction to the folk scene only happened when you came back from the States. But that wasn't the case, you're telling me.
No, not at all. I got into folk music and acoustic guitar playing quite a young age. Started out listening to Bob Dylan. That was when my sister was at university, back in the 60s, and I was probably about 13 at the time.
Right. So, the traditional way into the poppy side of folk music, if you like, in those days, in via Bob Dylan, and that sort of American influence and invasion that happened.
I guess so. It was a real mixture of things, though, really, for me. I got very, very heavily into people like John Renbourn, Bert Jansch, and that's when I started doing the finger picking. But then I started to take to like James Taylor and quite a bit of American music that I was hearing at the time.
But even then, it wasn't the real hardcore traditional folk music that people in this country might have been listening to before that came along.
Well, funnily enough, you know, I remember sitting around with my friends listening to Fairport Convention on Half Bricking and being blown away by it. I just loved that album. But, you know, I never really thought this is traditional music. I never had that thought in my mind. It was just music that I liked. And it was the same whether it fell, technically speaking, inside that genre or outside.
Because still a strong American influence in Fairport's music in those days. And there's been that continuing theme of an American influence in your music until quite recently. I think you've gone back to your roots and found the British tradition.
Well, I don't know if I've gone back anywhere. I don't necessarily feel I've gone back. I feel as though I just use whatever it is at the time that I want to use, and sometimes I think probably you can point to any area of it and say, you know, this is American, this is bluesy, this is folky, whatever. But I just use what I like, really.
So let's go back to those early days with Nicola Marsh, the rock and roll lifestyle of the dream come true out in Los Angeles. Or the dream almost come true. tell us about those days.
It didn't even almost come true.
Where it all went wrong.
Well, it didn't go wrong so much. I think back in the 70s, probably 74, that's when we got our first deal, when Pete and I got our first deal. He's from the Lake District, and we started out playing in this area in the Northwest. And then we moved to London. He moved to London first, actually, and then I joined him not long afterwards. Within a couple of years, we had a major record deal with CBS, and we made one album before they came to their senses, and then we went on and signed with Polydor. And it was kind of, in a way, a very exciting time, but, you know, there was so much more to it from my point of view. There was so much I didn't enjoy about it. But it's the kind of thing you can get very caught up in with the advances and the lifestyle and so on. So I kind of rode that out for a while.
So this was a case of sex and folk and rock and roll over in Los Angeles?
Yeah, well, everything except the good part you mentioned.
Yeah, that's good. Tick any two from three to decide which are the good parts, I suppose. So what was life in Los Angeles like in those days? Was it? I can imagine it was completely different to life in 1970s Lancashire.
Yeah, well, when we went to record our fourth album, that was 1978, we went to Hollywood and we actually recorded with some of the best guys over there, right? Great players, people, you know, Lee Sklar from James Taylor and Bill Payne from Little Feat. And I think I was yeah, I got a little bit sucked in, you know. I loved the lifestyle, or what I saw as the lifestyle there at the time, and the sunshine and everything. It appealed to me greatly. So no one could really stop me from moving over there, especially considering the state of things in this country at that time.
So what in the end happened to Nicol and Marsh?
Well, we split up just at that time, really. That's why I went over to Los Angeles. Pete carried on working with Polydor for a short period of time, and I think he worked with Vangelis for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it was incredible, actually. When I was out there one day, I was riding along in the car in Los Angeles and turned the radio on, and there was Pete's voice, you know. And he'd made this record that almost did it for him, I think.
Mm.
But it didn't quite, of course, you know. Familiar story in the business. But that's when we split up, and I was involved in my own musical projects out there.
Okay. And after, I think, was it 8 years you decided to pack all that back up and come back to the UK?
About 8 years, yeah. Yes.
Long enough? Do you miss those days?
No, not really. I think I missed... The first 2 years were okay. They were good. And then I sobered up. You know, and it was really a case of, regardless of how glamorous a place is, or you perceive a place to be, eventually it becomes pretty ordinary, and the sunshine turns into one long, smoggy kind of experience, you know. So when I came back, it must have been about 1988 when I came over here. And I really enjoyed playing the folk clubs, and there was a lot of work available that wasn't available to me over there. So I made the decision to move back permanently.
So had things changed a great deal in the intervening period of time?
Here?
Yeah.
They had. Or at least that's the way I saw it. I mean, I often think about this. I often wonder they had changed, definitely. But my view of things was probably different as well. So I just generally tended to be slightly more hopeful.
A lot of your career has been two tracks, really. You've had the solo career and various collaborations with people. One of the first was with Chris Weil. How did you meet the lovely Chris?
It's funny, you know, the first time I saw her, I was at the Foul Folk Festival, and I was walking through the bar. And you know how...
Oh, what a surprise.
Yeah. Well, in the bar there, you normally find, you know, people group together, as you do at festivals, you know. And I was very much drawn towards this voice coming out from a corner of the room. So I just remember distinctly seeing her on that day and listening to her voice. And then I was introduced to her by two friends, Dave and Helen Howard, who were very prominent on the folk scene at that time. And they suggested that maybe we could do one or two things as a duo. And it developed from there, really.
Simple as that, really.
As simple as that.
Yeah.
And I used to run like an open mic night every Tuesday night, singers' night, over in Longridge at the Bull and Royal.
Oh, yeah.
And so Chris used to come up there, and we used to do a few things together. And, you know, Bob's your uncle.
Right. And as these things tend to happen, one thing led to another. And it was Chris's involvement with the Albion Band and Ashley Hutchings that led to your involvement in the Albion Band.
Well, that's right. First of all, Chris and I were playing at the Fowl Festival 1 year. It could have been the following year, I don't know. But we were playing there, and the Albion Band were on after us. And so Ashley was there when we were just finishing our set, and he obviously took to Chris's voice, and they were looking for a singer at the time. So he asked her to join the Albions. And she was with them for about 4 years, I think.
Mm-mm. Now, Ashley's a figure who, strangely, would figure large in your career of late. How aware of him were you at the time?
Not a whole lot. I knew the name, certainly from the Fairport connection, but I wasn't really that so much aware of what he was doing then. But I soon became aware of it.
You've explained in the past that the way Ashley seems to work is he is constantly on the lookout for interesting talents and people who he'd like to work with, and then puts them together into various units and sees what comes out at the end. Is that pretty much what he did? Just gave you a call and said, do you want to join him with what I'm doing next?
you know, because of Chris and the circle of friends that I was making at the time, I would see Ashley socially, talk to him a little bit every now and again. I became aware of the fact that he was putting a dance band together, because, you know, originally, of course, he had the dance band of old, the Albion Dance Band. That's what it was called, wasn't it? Yes, yes. So he was then starting the Ashley Hutchins dance band. Yeah, well, he phoned me and asked me if I wanted to be involved in that. So I was involved in that for a while.
Cool. Well, why don't we hear some music from those days? We'll start with Nicol and Marsh, via Chris Weil, and then into the dance band.
Okay.
must change with time. Well, a clubland cue shuffles up to the hall, a big snake doing that frostbitten crawl. Blow on your fingers and stamp those feet. Soon you'll be dancing to the drummer's beat.
You'll be dancing to the drummer's beat.
You can keep your lines and stick to the law. Si got friends out back by the door, stepping Jimmy and warm those toes. Soon you'll be dancing off those cares and woes.
Dancing off those cares and woes.
Not much to keep her here, no prince to hold her near. Take this advice, girl,
go before he shows.
Best
go before he shows.
Well, you see that girl in black by the bar, it's pretty good odds I'll get pretty far. Hello there, honey, let me melt the ice. Soon you'll be dancing in a paradise.
Dancing in a paradise.
To the dance hall life I'm born and bred. I'm picking the arm and I'm picking the head. I knew every move from my tongue to my feet. You'll see me dancing to the drummer's beat. See me dancing to the drummer's beat.
Now I'm dancing to the drummer's beat.
Drummer's beat.
See me dancing.
Okay, so Ken, you've got these two parallel careers going at the same time, in the way that parallel things do go. So you've got your solo career on one hand, and all these partnerships on the other. Now, we know what you bring to a partnership. What do you look for from other people to bring to the party?
Money.
Sex appeal?
No, quality. Just quality, I think. And dynamics. You know, we've got to get on well, and we've got to be able to bounce off each other. All that kind of stuff.
So is sex appeal?
I guess so.
And have you found the perfect partnership? Because a lot of these partnerships work really well. Are you still looking out there for something new or something different?
No, not really. I very seldom look for things outside. They arrive.
Mm.
I enjoy my solo work probably more than anything. But I'd have to say that if there was any kind of partnership, if there was any situation where I was playing with other people that I've experienced, that comes close to being absolutely ideal, it would have to be presently with Steel Eye Span.
Mm. Well, we'll come on to Steel Eye later. Mm. But the solo career is obviously very, very important to you, because that's where you can do really what you want to do when you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the new album that you've got out now. This is 13 Reasons.
Yes.
And you've returned, really, to... the very earliest days of your career on one of the tracks to cover a Nicola Marsh song. There's new songs on there. There's a real mixed bag. And that's what came across to me most strongly listening to the album. Every song is identifiably Ken Nicol, but it is different. Everything is different from everything else.
Well, that's good. Then my objective has been achieved.
Well, yeah. If you don't like it, wait a minute. You know,
that's right.
Something better come out.
That's right. Yeah, it is. It's very varied, I guess. You know, and you could look at it and say, you know, it's eclectic.
Eclectic is a great word, and it really does sum it up. But if we had to nail you down to one strand of the various things that you're involved in, what's the one thing that you find the greatest challenge? I mean, is it guitar playing, songwriting, singing, making coffee?
Well, there's some things come more naturally than others, right? I'd say my finger picking comes more naturally than anything else. But I've always found it doesn't matter how natural it is. If you're trying to push the boundaries all the time, it's still very very challenging. Mm. And the solo work is probably the most challenging stuff that I do, but it has the biggest payoff. I think that's like anything in life, isn't it? You know, the more you really have to kind of set your sights and focus and everything, then the rewards are bigger.
Let's talk about your guitar playing, because I was listening to a track earlier and had to ask Ken whether it was double tracked or multi layered, and he told me no, it's all played in one shot. And I think there's only yourself and Richard Thompson who've ever done that to me. So how long do you have to practice to get to the level that you're at today?
I mean, how many years?
How many years? When did it all start? And is there a shortcut to do it? And how quickly can I get there?
I'm not sure about the shortcuts. I know that when I was probably 15, 16, and you know, I mentioned earlier that I was listening a lot to John Renbourn, I would hide away in the kitchen after school, and I would listen. I'd take the record player in with me and listen to these tracks and work out all this intricate finger picking, and I would just spend as long as it took to get all the moves. And I think, you know, when you're doing something at that age, it's quite, your mind's open, isn't it? Mm. You know, you don't worry about how long it's going to take. You just do it without all those expectations. And so really that formed the basis, I think, of so much of what I do now.
And, of course, you don't have all the outside pressures of adult life.
Well, this is true. This is true. I mean, and that's a very important point.
It's too late for me.
Actually, you know, I can't ever believe it's too late. But I think in the context of all the things we have to deal with later on in life, you know, it is quite a long shot.
I've got a car with a 2.4, an MPV with a sliding door. When I used to fill my tank, I'd get a phone call from the bank. Things went from bad to worse, I guess, when the bailiffs came to repossess. Then my life changed dramatically when I changed my car to LPG. Autogas LPG, first class fuel economy. It's so damn cheap, it's almost free when you drive your car on LPG. I go forward, I go back, I drive slow and I drive fast. I can do a U-turn too, and it costs me less than it does for you. Will I travel east and I travel west? Me less. A liter costs about 30p, and that's including VAT. Autogas LPG, first class fuel economy. It's so damn cheap, it's almost free when you drive your car on LPG. sells gas, it's true. But I've got a map for the ones that do. And I'm afraid the price could rise one day if the government gets its way. Oh, I've got a woman, oh me, oh my, there's so much she wants to buy. Now I've got my LPG, there's no DIVORC. Autogas LPG, first class fuel economy. It's so damn cheap, it's almost free when you drive your car on LPG. Autogas LPG, first class fuel economy. It's so damn cheap, it's almost free when you drive your car on LPG.
You mentioned Steel Ice Span, and was it about 2002 you got involved with those, I believe, with the Steel Ice Band?
Yeah, just 3 years ago, I got a phone call. I was in this studio, and the phone rang, and it was Rick Kemp.
Mm-hmm.
And he explained that they'd made this album, and they were doing this tour, reunion tour, and they needed a guitar player. So I had to consider it. Probably for the whole of 5 seconds.
And Rick had seen you demonstrating guitars, I think.
Yeah, I was performing at the Penrith Guitar Show, as I do most years. He walked in one day. In fact, it's quite a story that, you know. I was late getting there. I've never been the most punctual individual. And I remember that day I got to the show a little bit late. I was still in time for the slot that was organised for me. But they got a bit nervous and they shifted it. They shifted it to a later time. So I did the later spot, and halfway through that spot, Rick walked in and heard me play. And that was it, really. That was it. I was in the band then. So if I'd have been on time, and if I'd have been as punctual as everyone has always told me to be, I wouldn't be in that band now.
So fate played a hand.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Mm. And... once inside Steel Ice Span, I remember when you told me that you were joining Steel Ice, the first thing I said to you was, how's your Latin plain chant, and for joining in on Gaudete?
I'm getting better at them.
And you didn't really know that much about the band at that time.
Not a whole lot, no.
Yeah. No. Because I think you were in the States when Steel Ice really became a household name in this country.
I guess I would be, yeah. And early on, I mean, when they were... in the 70s, I suppose, when they were having hits here, even though I wasn't living in America, I was listening to a lot of American music. And it's not like I'd abandoned the English thing. It's just that my focus had just turned a bit.
Right. Now, tell us what it's like working inside Steel Ice Span, because from my point of view, it's one of the biggest names in our kind of music. A real monster name, if you like, and I can imagine that they'd be a little bit reticent to let a new boy like you just walk in there and start writing songs.
Well, it surprised me. It did, actually. Yeah, it surprised me. But I guess, you know, the songs that I brought in, they worked. They worked. What can I say? You know, it's just a pleasure, a joy to write for a band like that.
And it's always the interpersonality relationships with any group of people that either make it or break it.
Mm.
Everybody else knew one another for going back years, and you're an easygoing guy. You just slot in mm-hmm. there right from the off. Or did it take a little while just to make your presence known?
I think it was there at the beginning. I felt that, you know, it's a chemistry factor. And it's quite a unique thing there. You know, I've tried to quantify it, and I've not been very successful. But it certainly works. You know, the combination of people and the characters. That band has a character that that is something I've never come across before.
Mm. And there is another two sides. We're talking about the two parallel careers, but there's also the live side and the recorded side. A lot of artists say that they record out of duty and really shine on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I get the impression that it's a little bit different for you, and that you are much more in control of your recorded output as well, so it's much more your baby. But what's your favourite sort of arena, on record or on stage?
I never think about it that way, you know. I would have to say that when I'm on stage, I'm happier than when I'm in a studio. But I don't automatically think of it as one as being better than the other. You just get more of a buzz, you know, when you're in front of people and you're playing and, you know, with all the faults and everything.
So but what a lot of people say is that playing live is great, but touring stinks. The actual day-to-day grind of moving from one place to the next and arriving, but the actual time on stage is wonderful.
Time on stage is good, unless you're having a bad gig, then the time on stage is pretty bad. The touring thing, if you think about touring, often you don't think about the time on stage because it really is a small percentage of how much time you're away from home for. But on the road with Steel Eyes, I think that's probably about as good as it gets.
Okay. Time for a bit more music, I think. So why don't you tell us what we're going to play off the Steel Eyes panel?
Yeah, it's a song called Mistletoe Bough.
This is off the Winter album.
Sacred rhyme by bards and by singers of high degree. When cut from its place on the old oak tree by white-robed druid with golden knife, for they thought it a magical tree of life, and many a promise and holy vow they were solemnly sworn on the mistletoe down amid echoes of mirthful song, where hearts they make music as old friends meet, whose pulse keeps the time to the dancer's feet. And eyes they are bright with looks of love, up above. And who is she that will not allow a kiss that's claimed under the mistletoe?
Listening to Folkcast, and that was a broad overview of the career of Ken Nicol, my colleague and co-producer on Folkcast. Ken's released 5 of his most recent solo albums on Woven Wheat Whispers. There's a link to that website via our website, which is www.folkcast.co.uk, and there you find all the details about how to get in touch with us and send us any of your music or music requests or anything you want to get back to us with, feedback on the show. We love all that. So, as I say, Ken is not only downloading this stuff and listening to it and putting it on Folkcast, he's also uploading his music for other people to listen to and to, in his case, buy. But the PodSafe Music Network is there for people who no experience in the business, or not as much as Ken. So what do you think of all this, this whole brave new world of digital music?
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for an awful lot of people, people that just wouldn't be heard normally on the conventional stations. Basically, it puts the power in the hands of the people.
Well, of course, there is the argument that they're not being heard on the conventional stations because they're not good enough.
Well, it's obviously not true. There's there's an awful lot of great music out there. I listen to it. I see these people. It's a funny business. It's not easy, you know, getting the kind of credibility that you need.
Well, we mentioned the Podsafe Music Network. So this next track that we're going to play comes from that. Can you tell us anything about it, Ken?
It's by somebody called Catgut. We've tried to get some information on this person without much success. He's a rather mysterious figure.
Is that Mr. Gut?
Mr. Gut, I think the Christian name is Cat. And the track is called Skip.
Catgut there, shades of a young Nick Drake, perhaps. If you're Mr. Gut, or you know of him, or you know anything about him, drop us a line at the website and we'll get back to that, because one thing we do know about it is that we both like it. Right, well, that's almost the end for the first edition of Folkcast. Thanks for downloading it, thanks for listening to it, and keep an eye out for the next edition, which will be coming up within about a month, hopefully. Music in this podcast has been used either under licence or with the consent of the artists, and we'd like to thank WovenWheatWhispers.co.uk and the Podsafe Music Network for their help. Please get in touch with your comments, points of order and polite suggestions, and if you want your music included on a future Folkcast, drop an MP3 in the e-post to contact@folkcast.co.uk. And we'd also like to say a big thanks to our webmistress, Carol. And the last track for this inaugural edition of Folkcast comes all the way from over the other side of the Atlantic to us from Newfoundland. This is by Jim Fiddler, and it's called Avalonia.
I've watched her alone as she faces the phone, and I've seen how she deals with the hardships her children have tried to inspire her pride, and she's watched as they've died from the hardships. So bright as a child's starry night, though she's gazed upon many's the morning, and with every new dawn comes the strength to go on, and she prays that her children are learning. What terrible truth does she know but won't tell? In the curve of her face lies a heavenly grace, but her eyes tell a story of hell. And all that we know is not half of what's past. In the eyes of our children lies the key to our folly, and the future is rushing in fast. Whoa, Babylonia.
Listening to Folkcast, edition number 0001, produced by Ken Nicol and me, Phil Wids Widows. Please subscribe to our RSS feed directly at www.folkcast.co.uk or via your favourite podcast directory. Folkcast, the best in folk, singer-songwriter and roots music. Including this next track, what did you?
I don't quite know how to respond to that.
Including this next track. Ken, why don't you tell us about that?
About the next track?
Yeah, tell me.
Okay. It's by a group called Catgut.
I think it's a hymn rather than an act.
A hymn. It's a...
They are singular.
It's just one person.
Well, who knows? We don't know much about them.
Is that the surname or
that's Mr. Gut to you?
Mr. Gut. First name's Cat. It's. Are we carrying on with this?
keep going.